If you saw episode 111 with Marco Wutzer, then you know that he is a crypto speculator and investor. He was able to retire in his 30s from investing in crypto, and he now has a course and a newsletter to help others that are looking to do the same. If you want to go to the show notes and check out the investment course, Crypto Quantum Leap, or the investment newsletter, Project Serenity, then you can find them both there. Also, use the code BORDERLESS upon checkout, and you'll get 10% off.
Welcome to the Borderless Podcast, your guide to traveling, investing, and living beyond borders, where we talk about living the life that you want to live, where you want to live it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Borderless Podcast. This is your host, James Guzman, and today I spoke with Gabriel Scheer. Some of you might be familiar with him. I had him on the podcast, but it's been a long time ago. So he's down in Chile, and he started a project called Fort Galt, and we're going to talk about that. And I originally wanted to talk to him because, if you haven't heard, within the last week, there was a vote, and the people voted to scrap the Constitution. And so they're going to be starting over with the Constitution. This whole year, there's been riots in the streets, what I would say kind of like Antifa-style riots. They've been burning buildings. They've been doing all kinds of things. And they said that they wanted to scrap the entire government and start over. You know, they cite things like healthcare and public transportation and other things. But, you know, basically we can see that they want more what you call like socialist-style programs is what it seems to be, what they want. And we don't know what it's going to look like because they haven't actually voted on what the Constitution is going to be. So we'll see about that. But I wanted to contact Gabriel about that to see what, you know, what his thoughts were. And because I hadn't talked to him in a while about Chile. Now, what you're going to hear is honestly, it's not great. You know, I think that there's been a lot of bad things happening this year, especially 2020. We all know has been not a very good year for a lot of places around the world. But it was kind of surprising a lot of the things that he told me. And so it's not the most encouraging for people that are thinking of moving abroad. But I did want to be honest and put this podcast out there. You know, you hear the bad and the good, and you can decide for yourself. I've had people that are, you know, told me that they're interested in getting residencies, going to Chile for different reasons. So he will give you his opinion on whether that's a good idea or not. So I think it was a good conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. Borderless. All right, Gabriel, how's it going, man?
Not too bad. I mean, all things considered, right?
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking, the last time that we spoke was in Chile, which is where you are now. It was at Exosphere.
Oh, right.
That was an interesting experience, man.
That was different, for sure.
Yeah. It was like an entrepreneur, I don't know what you would call it, kind of, you know, an incubator or something.
Yeah, I think they referred to it as a boot camp.
A boot camp. Although
it was 3 months long, so it was a bit of a stretch as far as boot camps go.
Right. But it was nice being there in Reñaca. The Reñaca Beach was beautiful. We had a blast. I met a lot of people. You know, the program itself was... It was very kind of unorthodox. You know, they had us like sitting in the room for hours and, you know, like, I forget what they called this thing, or nobody talks or whatever. You know, it was just
a community sessions. Yeah.
It was a real experiment. I don't know. But, anyway, so that was the last time I saw you. And, you've been working on this, your program there, Fort Galt in Chile for a while. It sounds like, you know, you've got, it's now built and all that. It's been a while since you've been on, definitely like 3-4 years at least. So,
I've been down here 6 years, man. It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah, I know. I've been in Mexico for like 10 now. So,
man.
Yeah. But, hey, yeah. I'm here for a reason. I like it. So, So let us know for the people. You know, I'm sure a lot of people are not familiar with the project. Maybe a little bit of why you decided to go to Chile in the first place and what you're doing there.
Well, I think you can relate to being a young guy that's maybe got some wanderlust, maybe dissatisfied with his home country for various reasons, and you get this idea in your head that, you know, maybe I should be spreading my wings and exploring and looking for my answers somewhere else. So, yeah, I think for some reason or another, I got convinced that Chile was probably the place I should be, at least to check out thoroughly. So I came down here in search of greener pastures. And, yeah, Exosphere, that was one of those things that had just kind of popped up at the right time. I had already made plans to come down to Chile, and then I guess I started talking with somebody that was affiliated with the outfit there online, and he said, well, why don't you just come on down and meet us and take part in this thing for 3 months, and it'll be a good way to meet people in the area and get comfortable. And so, I mean, that made sense to me. And entrepreneurship boot camp, that sounds cool. Why not? So that was kind of a cool way to get introduced to Chile. It was with a whole bunch of fellow foreigners all around me. But yeah, I mean, there's a whole big convoluted story as to how Fort Galt itself came to be. But long story short, I came down here thinking that a whole bunch of other people like me were going to be here too. And we were all going to be getting together and building this cool new town in the valley and stuff like that, but that never materialized. But I didn't want to just pack up and go home either, so being the stubborn wanker I am,
let me just interject, because you know, we can make it explicit. I mean, you're talking about the Gulch Chile project that you were you thought that was interesting, you know, at the beginning, and then, you know,
for
people that are familiar with the project, it didn't work out and you still wanted to do something similar. So
And not only did the project itself turn out to be, you know, less than honest and real, but even Chile itself was really being promoted by the people behind that project as being a lot more than it really is. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I don't want to be insulting to anybody or anything like that, but it was portrayed as this libertarian paradise where, you know, it was extremely business friendly and you could start a business overnight and the bureaucracy was minimal and the president was an Ayn Rand fan and all this stuff, and basically 99% of that was horse shit. So anyway, I mean, some things you learn the easy way, some things not so much, but so yeah, I mean, this lesson had to be learned one way or another, that no location is going to solve your problems for you.
Right.
You take you with you.
Yeah.
And there's some variation of the same problems in every country, and it's just a matter of navigating them and deciding on what matters most to you.
You know,
for some people, the culture is really important. For some people, there's going to be language barriers. For some people, there's, you know, if you have a lot of money, you can get around most things. But I mean, you just kind of have to assess your own situation and really do your research on where you're looking to potentially go and see if it's a fit for you. There's no objective standard that you can really go by for that, because different people value different things.
Yeah. Now, I do consultation calls with people, and I help people that are interested in, you know, going overseas and stuff. And still, Chile is on the radar for a lot of people, so they might be interested to hear about that. You know, it's amazing. You know, when, you know, you or I, you know, we've been overseas for a long time, and so it's kind of second nature to us. But there's a lot of people that they really don't know anything about going overseas. Don't know anything. They just know what they see online, the little bit that they read. So if somebody's considering Chile and, you know, maybe residency there or something like that, what could you tell them about them? You said you've been there, how long again? I forget.
6 years.
6 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So what would you tell them about that, you know, considering Chile?
There's nothing about it that's particularly attractive for people that are looking for a strategic citizenship or residency program or anything like that. I mean, it's pretty run-of-the-mill standard. You know, the short version is that when you arrive, you depending on where you're coming from, you know, if you're coming from like Nigeria or Arabia or something, you're going to have a really hard time. But if you're coming from the US or Europe or Canada or something, then it's pretty straightforward. You land, they give you a tourist visa that's good for 3 months. If you want to extend it past that, you can pay like $100 and get it renewed for another 3 months, which gives you a total of 6. At that point, you kind of have to know what your game plan is. If you want to just be sort of the perpetual tourist and not stick around for too long or whatever, like some people just leave the country for a day, you know, they'll leave to go to Argentina or Paraguay or something and then come right back and start the clock over again. So you can get away with doing that for a while. But if you do decide that you want to put some roots down or start a business or something, then you apply for temporary residency first. Mm-hmm. And you can do that through a few different means depending on what you're doing. If you're a student, you can go through that avenue. If you're a retiree, you can go through that avenue. If you're starting a business, you can probably apply for the investor's visa.
Yeah.
Just depending on what your situation is. And then after a year, they'll assess, you know, okay, do you want to just apply to extend that and do another permanent visa, or rather do another temporary, or would you like to upgrade that to a permanent?
Yeah.
So if you apply for permanent residency, they look into your situation, see, you know, they want to make sure that you have a good income to support yourself, and, you know, they look, if you've been here on investor's visa, they'll look and see how you've actually been using that. Have you bought land? Have you built a business? Have you done something to follow through on the plan that you pitched to them at first? And so generally, if all that's in order, they'll grant you that, and then you can stay for as long as you want. And
yeah.
If you want to, after a while, you can apply for citizenship, but I don't really see any benefit in that, honestly.
Yeah, I did a video about the investment program or the entrepreneur program that they have there, or the grant. So people can go back and look it up. Unfortunately, I can't think of the name of it right now, but I do have one.
Startup Chile,
yeah. That's the name of it. I can't remember the video, but I did a whole video with one of the people that helps people do that. So that was kind of interesting. You know, a lot of people, you know, lately, one of the biggest things that people have been interested in, you know, several different residencies or citizenships or whatever, is, you know, basically a place to escape to, you know, if they, you know, if like it's some sort of extreme lockdown or totalitarian takeover where they are, that if you have residency somewhere else, then that gives you, you know, escape route. And so, you know, I've had people ask me about Chile, but it sounds like, I don't know, like if something like that were to happen, it's hard to say, well, I mean, what's going to happen in the future, you know, because we've seen this year that all these things have happened that are completely unprecedented. So it's hard to say what could happen in the future. But it sounds like Chile hasn't been so great as far as escaping that kind of stuff this year.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the kind of person that's still vulnerable, like if your livelihood depends upon the general climates, the political climate, the social climate of the country that you're in, then yeah, I can't recommend it right now. I mean, by all means, come and check it out for yourself. The thing about Chile is that 90% of everything that goes on is in Santiago. So I generally warn people away from Santiago. I mean, that is where most of the expats are. So if that's important to you, like having quick access to a social network and stuff, then okay, maybe start there. But that's where all the crazy is. It's not something that I would advise. So what we did is we came down here to the south, and it's very sparsely populated down here. So it's easy to lose yourself down here, and you're insulated from any of the craziness that goes on. Well, that is to say most of it. The further away from the cities you are, the more isolated. So if you're just looking to create sort of a getaway place to hide out once in a while, like if you want like a little retreat or something, that's essentially what we did. And it's still good for that. But I can't really think of any other, you know, reason to recommend it to anyone right now.
Okay.
Because this whole past 12 months, I mean, we've had social unrest, riots, cities have been torched, essentially, like Santiago's entire metro system is torched.
Oh, yeah, I saw pictures of that. Yeah, they blew up the metro system.
Yeah, like shit. Really tall, impressive buildings were burned down, too. Like, there was this one giant building that had all my favorite music stores in it. Hmm. Gone.
And that was an old building?
No, it was a nice new one. And just last week, a church was burned down.
Yeah.
So, like...
Last week?
Yeah, this is... Yeah, because there's been so much going on. Like, it started... Well, I mean, depending on who you ask, there's factors to why these particular people have been upset that stretch back since, you know, since Pinochet was in power, basically. The leftists have been pissed off ever since that time. And so this is something else. Like, when Chile was pitched to me when I was first considering coming down, I was told that, oh, yeah, the leftists are very few and far between. Like, you'll see a couple of kids maybe protest in the street once in a while, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Not true. Like the U.S., it's about half the country. And so you've got the conservatives are more like what we call the silent majority. You know, they have enough votes to win elections still, but they don't have any spare time on their hands to go and protest or stir shit up. You know, it's the leftists mm-hmm. that do that. And for the past 12 months, they've been at it. Actually, about 12 months ago is when they really broke out. There was some incident in Santiago where the fares at the metro stations were raised by a couple
pennies or something. Saw that, yeah.
And they all just lost their shit. Like, that was the spark that lit the haystack. And everything went nuts from there, and it escalated very, very quickly. And thing is, it was considered a national event because, you know, what happens in Santiago is seen and felt by everyone else because everyone watches the news channels from there and stuff. And so the message was that this is a national movement that's sparking right now. And the Joker movie was in theaters at that exact time. So everyone was going to that movie, getting all fired up, you know, like, oh, this is how we do this. You know, we dress up in clown makeup and start burning cars and shit. So, that was the thing to do at that moment, and it really gave license to everyone that wanted to throw a tantrum. It gave them social license to do it right then and there. And so even where we were, like, we're off on this scenic, you know, coastline down in the middle of nowhere pretty much, and still there were local communist thieves that figured, hey, this is a great time to go rob the gringos. So sure enough, I woke up in the middle of the night and there were like five bandits in our property just stealing shit.
No shit, you were there.
Oh yeah, they tied us up and everything. Yeah,
get the fuck out of here.
Oh yeah, it was nuts. And like, that never would have happened the previous week, you know. It was like just the spirit, everything lit up. At that time, it's like, okay,
no,
we now have
shit.
social license to lose our shit and throw a big national tantrum. And so that went nuts for like a few good solid months, to the point where like nobody even wanted to go to Santiago or anything because it was like a war zone. And then COVID came along at a convenient time to essentially give the government a good reason to tell everyone to go home and impose draconian measures to just lock everything down.
Yeah.
And that's how it's been. It was a good pretext for squashing the riots, but I mean, we've had to deal with ridiculous lockdown situation here.
Mm-hmm.
And even this, I'm in a really nice little tourist town right now by a lake. It's like a wonderful place to be most of the time, but we're under house arrest basically. Like,
yeah.
just to leave the house to go get groceries, I have to go online to the police website and fill out this big form and apply for fucking permission. Mm. Like, as a libertarian, this is not cool.
Right, right. Yeah, I so, think, yeah, you were saying, like, there's a lake in front of your house and you can't take your child out, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, fortunately, these forms are easy to fake and the police generally don't get too out of hand about it here, but still, I mean, and then of course, like everywhere else, you know, there's all the mask measures and having to check your temperature all the time, going to stores and stuff. And I mean, I realize that's commonplace, but they're really taking it to the nth degree here.
Wow. Well, and
so that, that kind of revealed a cultural side of things here that I didn't notice when I first showed up. It's just kind of, whether it's a result of the Pinochet era or if it's just baked into the bloodlines, I have no idea where it all comes from, but they, when the state cracks the whip, they get into line very quickly here.
Wow. Yeah. And, yeah, that's pretty crazy. I mean, I think that you said that they suspended the Constitution there, and basically they have, like, military in the streets and stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's full martial law until the end of the year, and then at that time they'll decide whether or not they want to extend it.
Yeah.
So actually just yesterday there was a vote on whether or not, and this kind of comes full circle back to where, like, when these riots broke out, the general demand was that we need to throw out the Constitution and draft a whole brand new one. And I mean, that's a pretty tall order. I mean,
yeah, right.
They weren't going to cave to that. I mean, the president at first said, no way, just we'll wait for this to play itself out. But they kept at it and kept at it. And eventually they finally caved in and said, all right, we'll go to the table and we'll have a vote and we'll let everyone decide whether or not they want to throw out the Constitution. And so that vote happened yesterday.
Right.
And it was roughly 2-1 in favor of throwing it out.
Right.
And I think by that time, a lot of the people voting, well, first of all, it was online, so probably some of the old people had problems with that. But I think a lot of people were just absolutely fed up with the riots and the lockdown and stuff, and they just wanted this to be done, like, even if it meant...
And they thought that throwing out the Constitution would do that?
Yeah. Yeah. It was this implied threat of, until we throw it out, there's just going to continue to be more riots. So,
without knowing the details of the situation, I mean, it would seem to me that almost, you know, that having a constitution is what, you know, protects you from full-fledged democracy. So if you put it up to a vote, a democratic vote, hey, do we have a constitution or are we just going to have a full-fledged democracy? Then it's going to be voted into a full-fledged democracy no matter what. That's always going to happen. So maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what do you think? You know, again, I don't know anything about this is one of the reasons I hit you up and just to talk to you because all these different things going on. So what do you think as far as, you know, you see the direction of, you know, the people that are pushing this and what has happened yesterday? This is kind of a big deal. So, you know, if you could give your estimation or opinion about what might happen in the future, what do you think is going on here?
I tell you, until last year, there was an influx of immigrants from Venezuela showing up. And they all tell you that the same story. This happened there.
Hmm.
It started with a vote to throw out the Constitution, and the leftists got their foot in the door, and they wrote up this new Bill of Rights that made everything they like a human right. And obviously that stuff's not even, you know, fundable. So even if you create the Constitution that sounds like, you know, utopia, and you have this Bill of Rights and everything that has all of your favorite things in it, you can't implement it. So it's just going to create more frustrations later on. I mean, the bright side to it is, as I said, it quells or at least postpones the civil unrest for a while. So those of us who are trying to function down here can recalibrate and shuffle our things around a little bit, and those who want to leave can leave, and those who want to hunker down can do so and accumulate the appropriate resources. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't recommend investing in Chile right now or anything like that, because if it keeps on the path that it is, it could end up like Venezuela. But
yeah,
it's one step at a time.
Well, you know, I appreciate your honesty on all this that you're saying now. You know, I try to, with my podcast, with the stuff that I do, I don't want to make this an infomercial of moving overseas and all this type of stuff. I want to give the truth to people, the good and the bad and all this and to what we're actually looking at, what are the real solutions. You know, I don't want to bullshit people here. So, yeah. So, anyways, did you want to say something?
No, I mean, this is the thing is like my business here with Fort Galt is a real estate company. We have a community. We have plots of land that we sell. We have rooms in a building that we sell to people that are moving down here. And so I have to be really clear about what we're offering, what they'll find down here, and what we're not. Because I really don't want somebody to make the same sort of leap of faith that I did and show up here and end up royally screwed because I pitched them something that wasn't true.
Right. So, how's the what's the position with the with your project there? How's that going?
We've just had to put it on pause. I mean,
but it's built.
Yeah, I mean, the structure's built. There's still work to do on the inside to make it actually livable and so that the members can move in. So we're waiting for a window of opportunity to get that done. But then as soon as it's done, it's just a matter of, like, we'll probably do a bit of a rebranding to try to blend in a little more with the community and be less of the obvious gringo target, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, tighten up security and just... yeah, like I had a friend in school growing up when I was a kid, and his parents had moved to Canada from Germany. And I always, well, we all saw them as the rich family, right? Because we were all farmers for the most part. And somehow these Germans came along and built this huge farm, and they had all this money and a nice house and stuff. And we never really understood what the deal was there. But it turned out that his parents had been sent by the larger family from Germany, because as soon as World War II was finished, they all gathered up all of the family members. You know, I don't know if it's like Christmas or Thanksgiving or something. They said, okay, we need an out plan in case this shit happens again. You know, like if Europe goes to war again, we need an out. So there's this nice young couple of ours here. We're going to send them to Canada. We're going to give them all of our spare money and have them set up someplace, just a landing pad, so that if shit goes down, we can have somewhere to be. And I think a plan like that, a strategy like that, makes sense still with Chile. This is a spot where if weird shit starts going down in North America and Europe to the point where people are afraid of a world war or something like that, I mean, Chile is a great tactical spot to end up to have your escape route. The ocean and the wind currents keep all of the potential fallout and craziness up north where it belongs, and none of it's going to come down here. There aren't any nuclear targets down here, anything like that. I mean, it's, and as far as like South American countries go, Chile is still one of the better ones in terms of having access to the comforts that you're used to and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, Mexico has worked out well for me. I mean, it's very close proximity to the States. I remember that was one of the big kind of selling points of Chile for a lot of people years ago, was talking about how far it is from the States, you know, if anything really bad was to happen. You know, I think that, you know, what the actual answer to the solution is trying to create some sort of communities or some sort of hubs that are going to be post-national or different than what we're thinking of now. Whether we like it or not, this is the way things are going. I don't think that, you know, voting for Trump or Biden or whatever, or even to suspend the Constitution or completely remake the government in a democratic way in Chile, I really don't think that this is going to be the answer. I think that, you know, we're going to have to think of new ways, you know, systems of us getting together with like-minded people, whether that's, you know, people that are in, you know, that agree with us or don't agree with us. You know, it doesn't matter, kind of a decentralized approach. And I think that's really what you were trying to do there with Fort Galt in the beginning. And I think that's that. You know, I'm trying to talk to different people on the podcast about these different approaches that we have. I mean, I think that it's more important than ever. I mean, look at this. I mean, you know, it's not. You know, I know that you find yourself in a situation that you didn't think you would, and you know that you find it to be unfortunate. But I mean, all over the world, no matter where you are, if you're in the United States, you know, you're in California, you're in New York, you're in, you know, all over the United States, or in Europe, you know, in China, and all over the world, you know, you find yourself in the place that you didn't think that, you know, you never imagined that you'd be in. And so, you know, what's the answer to this? You know, we just go and try to continue with the old ways of coping with this. And you know, just sit and you know, not move, not think past the borders, as you would say, or, you know, the boxes that you've been put in, or try to think outside the box. So I think that's really what we've been trying to do. And you know, I think you and I were really on the cusp of this, and we're going to see more and more of this happening. You know, a lot of people in the United States are moving from state to state. They're going from low tax states to, I'm sorry, high income, high tax states to low tax states, and you know, less freedom states to more freedom states. But this is going to happen worldwide. I mean, we're going to have an economic collapse, and that's when this is really going to shake out. You know, we're still you know, just riding on all the capital that's been gained through, you know, hundreds of years of Western civilization and all these different countries that have gotten to a point where they have all this capital saved up, and we've just been eating away at that. And yeah. I think that, you know, obviously it's going to come to a point where we can't just keep eating through that. And the government, well, I should say we, the governments mostly, are eating through this, and the richest people in our society, like we see with these trillions of dollars of bailout, you know, bills and all this stuff, they're just eating through all the capital that's been accumulated. And there's going to be a point where people are going to, you know, it's going to come to a day of reckoning. It's going to come to a day that people understand that you can't just live off of money given to you by the government. So.
And different personality types, and you know, there's no one size fits all answer. Mm-hmm. What we did, we came all the way down here to play pioneer. And in retrospect, bad idea in terms of appealing to a broad audience. If you want a more, let's say, if you want a safer business model to work with, don't pick this one. Okay. Because going to the other side of the planet to play Pioneer, that's a crazy young man's game. Huh. Notice I said three things in there. Crazy young man. Women are not attracted to this.
Right.
It's scary. It's something for people that are very flexible. They don't have roots put down yet. They don't have attachments holding them back. It takes more balls than your average plan. I mean, it takes a certain kind of wiring in your head to jump down this particular rabbit hole and pursue this as a potential solution. So, I mean, there are people that it appeals to. I mean, obviously. But my next project is in Canada.
Okay.
As soon as construction here is finished, I have some great people that can manage and rent out to people and take care of the place during the tourist seasons and stuff. And I'm going to run up there and start the next spot, which takes into account what I've had to realize, that taking big leaps of faith like this is rare. People are not suited for that. Generally, they want a sense of community first. They want to find their tribe first. Mm-hmm. They can do crazy stuff with them later, but they got to gather first. And they don't want to gather somewhere unknown with a whole bunch of variables. Mm-hmm. They want to gather in the U.S. They want to gather in their home country first.
Okay.
So that's going to be kind of my approach for the next location. Like, I've always had in mind to do a whole bunch of locations all throughout the world. Like, not necessarily branded the same or anything like that, but just different projects, different community projects with different orientations that are geared to different audiences, to different customers, and that sort of thing. And so down here, I've always been limited in terms of what I can do because I'm a foreigner. You know, like, There's a lot of extra hoops to jump through when you're trying to just become legal and function down here, because you're moving to a new country, you're trying to integrate and stuff. And then there's the cultural and language barriers and stuff like that too. And you're like, even if you legally integrate, even if you learned language perfectly, which I definitely have not, you're always going to be the rich gringo that's an easy target, you know. They're always going to be trying to screw you in some way, even if it's just pricing you higher or trying to slip something past you or something. There's always that just kind of under the surface of things. And there's just all these little things that you don't have to worry about when you're in your home country. Mm-hmm. And I find that I can be so much more effective among my own kind, shall I say. Like, right. I don't relate to Canadians in general as being my people, per se, but because I was raised among them, I'm just naturally better at dealing with them.
Yeah.
And I can be a lot more productive. I can get more done. I can network faster. I can make things happen a lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and, you know, yeah. I would just say, you know, I have always admitted that, you know, I'm what you would consider to be a third culture kid, meaning that I was raised in different cultures. I speak English and Spanish, and I was raised in different, you know, in those cultures. So it's been something normal to me. I'm able to function in Latin America in general, you know, pretty easily. You know, I'm not. Although I am, you know, a gringo, it's a little bit different. You know, I can understand, you know, they're trying to talk in Spanish and say something like, you know, to pull something over me. I can understand it. And I'm looked at a little bit differently. So I would never, you know, try to deny that that's, you know, that's something that has given me, you know, an upper hand, you know, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, I think especially, you know, the better you know the language, the more that you can kind of embed yourself into it, or even if it's not you personally, if you're trying to do business, if you have somebody else that's a local that you can get on your team, or, you know, be kind of your, you know, your face job or whatever for whatever you're trying to do, then that can help. But yeah, it's something to keep in mind. Yeah.
And like, I'll always have Fort Galt to be part of the bigger picture too. Like whether I do a bunch of other things closer to home where I'm from, you know, those can always be connected to Fort Galt. So I can gather, you know, tribes in Canada or Europe or US or whatever, and they can all know that, hey, you've got this spot waiting for you in Chile if you ever need to, you know, go and take refuge, or even if you just like want a holiday or something, that's a spot that we can all just kind of fall back on, you know.
Well, it's, I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, I see the pictures that you post, and I mean, it's just, I mean, you're out there in, you know, nature, and, it, you know, it looks really great out there. So
all the important stuff, like fantastic water, you know, right by the ocean, you have access for anyone that has a boat or whatever. And so,
So, if it's not too uncomfortable, I think that people would probably want me to ask a little bit more about, you said you got robbed?
Yeah.
And so what happened with that?
Oh, man. I mean, I can give you the quick, simple version here, I guess. One of the guys that we had out there, he had purchased a plot, and he developed a bit of a reputation for leaving nice, fancy, brand new tools lying around. And so he had been robbed a few times previously. Not violently, but just the fact that it was able to happen again and again like that, word, I'm sure, just started floating around amongst the locals that we were low-hanging fruit. And that's the thing about crime down here, is that violent crime is pretty rare, but there's a lot of just like opportunistic, swindly kind of stuff. And so if you're a soft target, you can expect some problems, especially around construction sites. So, like, if you have supplies lying around or tools lying around or whatever, you can just expect that some of them are going to vanish. So, I mean, once everything erupted and the local, you know, communist sympathizers and such got emboldened by this, I mean, they just went with the tide, I suppose. And so anyway, this one night we were out camping on the property and woke up in the middle of the night to like a scratching sound at the door. I thought, oh, because we had seen a rat out there earlier. So we thought, oh, he's probably just trying to find some food or something. So I kind of staggered out to the door and opened it up and stumbled out there, you know, trying to find this rat. No rat. It was five dudes all bundled up with fucking weapons and stuff, just ready to tie us up. So that was a strange way to wake up in the middle of the night.
Fuck, man.
So yeah, they two of my buddies got a bit of a beat down there because they tried to resist, and me and one other guy, I guess we had the benefit of seeing all five of our adversaries at once, so we knew it was kind of futile. Yeah. So we were just tied up and left there, and they took what they could, and it was weird because they were sputtering all kinds of like propagandistic stuff at us, telling us to go home and take our Chicago boys with us and stuff, you know.
Wow.
It seemed like it was not pre-planned so much. Like, I don't think they were expecting us to be there. I think they were expecting to just find all of our nice tools easily stealable, and it would be easy, but they didn't count on us being there. So I think they were just improvising for most of it. But anyway, it's just an example of how, like, just the mood, you know, a shift in the winds can stir people up and motivate them to do stuff they wouldn't have done previously.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I want to, get people to think, you know, I a lot of my listeners, you know, they are in the United States, and, you know, they think, oh, that sounds so crazy. You know, I never want to
wait
in
for
a place
it.
Like that. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying is that, yeah, just wait for it. I mean, this is, you know, when you pump these types of ideas in people for a long time, not just that, you have economic collapse, you have people locked indoors, you have all these situations. This is the direction things are going. Don't think that where you are is immune to this type of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would say just, you know, kind of prepare, think ahead. I'm not optimistic.
I mean, in hindsight, obviously we should have been more prepared.
Yeah.
But we hadn't had any problems like that up to that point. Like, it had been several years and things had been perfectly peaceful and we've been on good terms with the neighbors and everything like that. It's always been quiet and nice and all. Like, everything changed so fast. And we underestimated it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I had a gun on the property. I had been servicing it that day, but I wasn't sleeping with it.
Right. Well, and you said it was like five guys. I mean, that would have been tough.
Yeah. Well, they actually managed to steal the gun before even coming to me. So,
oh, shit.
I mean, being prepared is, I mean, you can be prepared on paper, but right, to be actually prepared is that it's a subtle nuance of a difference, but it makes all the difference in the world when the time comes, and you can't see that time coming.
Right, right. Yeah, well, that's unfortunate, man. I'm really sorry to hear about that. But so now you're planning on going back to Canada, huh?
Eventually. I mean, we still have quite a bit of work here to do in terms of finishing up the interior of the building. So, I mean, probably not until midway through next year.
Mm-hmm. And what are you going to do there?
I'm going to take a swing at founding a new town. Mm-hmm. So one thing that's always bugged me, even since childhood, is this idea of, you know, you can never really own your property because even if you pay off and you have no mortgage and you're still paying property taxes to the county or something, you know? So incorporating a town to be in charge of the property taxes, that kind of got me thinking. And then like, oh, well, you can also be in charge of law enforcement within the town. You can also, you know, you're you take on a lot of the responsibilities and aspects of life that people often complain about, those of us especially who are more libertarian-minded. And then, of course, the whole, you know, Jordan Peterson philosophy of clean your room first, you know, and start small, you know, and then scale up as you're able to, take on more responsibility and expand that. Like, we see people running for president who have never successfully managed a business or anything. And like, to me, that's just insanity. Like, mm-hmm. like, I think Fort Galt was an important part of my own story, my own education, my own development. And then just, I want to just keep scaling up and just keep increasing and expanding and learning more with each step and just keep it going in that direction to the point where I'm actually in charge of my own life, to the point where I'm not resentful of masters over me and all that sort of thing, you know. So, and also just being on my home turf, as it were, makes networking and gathering people so much simpler. Like, even just through like Facebook, like social media and stuff, I've been able to reach kind of back up to Canada and connect with a lot of like-minded people who are very ready and willing to make a move like that. I've been finding that people are very interested in the idea of moving and gathering into intentional communities, as long as they don't have to do anything completely crazy like leave their country. For some reason, leaving their country is still this big mental barrier that most people have. And Chile, I mean, oh, I have to rotate the globe to see it? When you're taking the plane, it's really not much difference. It's just, how long do I close my eyes before I wake up in a new country?
Right.
Well, the distance mentally is still something that's a huge hurdle for people to overcome. So if you can remove that aspect from the proposition, it makes it so much easier to sell.
Yeah. Well, that was the whole idea of Borderless. It's not that we shouldn't, you know, that nobody needs to have any borders of their property or their countries or whatever. The point is, do you get past your own borders, your own psychological borders? And whatever that is, you know, the things that are keeping you back from doing what you want to do. And a lot of times that has to do with just, you know, if you're living in a place that sucks or is bringing you down or is expensive or whatever, the whole list of things, then there is an option that you can go, from that. You know what I mean?
And right now, I mean, COVID has really, well, not in all markets yet, wait for it, but we are starting to see, like, especially commercial real estate prices coming down, and housing and everything is being affected a lot by this. So there are opportunities in this. Like, if you look back to the Great Depression, you know, back in the 30s, fortunes were made off of that. And the Great Depression that's coming now, because of all these lockdowns, it's going to be the same deal. And if you position yourself properly, you can take advantage of it. And, like, I don't know if you've seen what the seasteading people are up to now. They went and bought a cruise ship because the
I'm trying to get him on the podcast. If anybody knows, if anybody, this guy Nick,
Chad.
If anybody can get me in touch with him, I'd like to get him on the podcast. By the way,
yeah. So that's a perfect example of, like, COVID killed the cruise companies, and so they've been selling off ships as basically scrap prices, you know. So they just, I think it was like $5 million or something, they gathered it together and they just bought one of these ships that was in perfect condition, and okay, great, we're all just going to move on to a big ship now.
Yeah. So. Hey, I'm interested.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I just think that we're going to need to have to find different alternative, communities, ways of living. This is really going to be the way forward. I don't think that, I repeat this a lot in the podcast and stuff like that, is that, going back to these old ways of, you know, the 1960s, the 1970s, the 1950s, you know, we're talking about the same dichotomies of class warfare and, you know, the Reagan Republicans and, the Barack Obama Democrats and all that, whatever. Look, this is not the paradigm we're living in. Okay, we have completely different technology. This is a completely different world. Those type of solutions are not going to work. So we have to look forward. There can be positive things. You know, we can go in a decent direction. You don't need to be black-pilled, but you need to think outside the box. You need to think of new ways that we can, you know, make you know, the society, whatever, fit in with the age that we're in, with the technology, and also with the mentality that we have. So the
mentality is most of it, man.
I'm telling you, like, for sure.
Just growing yourself beyond the point where you feel you have to impose your preferences on others, that's huge. Because that's what all government's based on right now. I mean, everyone right now is struggling over voting power and who's going to get their guy in the big chair and stuff. And it's just, I think you and I are going to see in our lifetime that whole structure just fall away. And it's not going to be through any kind of violent revolution or anything. It's just going to be technology offering us the tools by which to not really need those old structures anymore. I'm working on an app right now. It should be finished in 3 weeks or so. And it's a stepping stone towards a much larger, more complex version that we can talk about some other time. But just the very first minimum viable product is just something for tagging yourself the same way that you would tag videos when you upload them to YouTube or something like that. You know, just figure out what tag words describe you and are important to you and sum you up. Like, what are your most important values? How do you make tags out of those? And then you broadcast those, and anyone that has a matching list of tags sees you and you see them. And just by that, we can sort of organically find each other in the real world offline. Because, I mean, social media is kind of useful in some ways, but it's also just a big bunch of stupid noise. I'm really interested in kind of getting past that phase where technology is tools, but not a distraction, not something that takes us out of life.
Yeah, I've gotten, you know, lately. So I've always been, for a long time, I've been on board with the idea that technology, you know, this is what's going to be the key piece that brings us freedom, and that's what's really going to change things. And I think it is going to change things, but I've also been kind of, you know, thinking also more about, you know, the idea that technology in a lot of ways enslaves us, and it kind of necessarily does it. I mean, there's something inhuman about it, that the farther and farther we get into trusting and relying on technology, the more, you know, the more that it takes out of the human domain, and I get a lot more detail about it. But so I'm not so sure about that, honestly, these days. You know, I think that more, as I've said in the beginning, I made several videos about cryptocurrency and all this, and I am positive about cryptocurrency, but that I didn't see it as something that's going to save us all, because you know, the
just
thing
a
is
tool.
It's a tool, and the you know, statism and all this stuff, it lives in the minds of people. It's propagandized. It's a spell that's put over people, and until you break that, then a tool could be negative. A tool could be used by the state.
Absolutely.
So that's really the big thing that we're working against.
It's kind of depressing to admit, but once you admit it and you make peace with it, then you can be empowered and move on. But I basically just had to come to terms with this is what humans are. I mean, I don't know. There's the whole Fermi paradox thing that people like to talk about, right? Like, why haven't aliens made contact if they're out there? You know, and my thought process has been that why would they come here? What's here for someone with that kind of technology, what's here that they can't generate for themselves back where they live? And by the same token, why would we ever go to them? Like, if we have that level of technology, is it not much more plausible that we would just develop artificial worlds here in cyberspace, like the Matrix or something, and just all prefer to live in there? Because why go exploring strange new worlds that take forever to get to if you can create anything you want? Mm-hmm. You can create all your perfect fantasies, create your utopias, and if you get bored of one, you can swap it for a different one or whatever. Like, that's better than any space travel fantasy. So if you extrapolate that path, then what does the human race eventually turn into? But everyone dies in their pods and we're left with the big computer talking to itself.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe that's just what we're destined to become, and how much of a role we play in that path is just a matter of personal preference.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always thought that, you know, it's kind of interesting that human beings, at least in this earth, were the only ones that were domesticating ourselves, you know, in some way with technology and things like this. And we're doing it more and more. So I don't know. I think that there's a reason, you know, a lot of people with this year, the COVID crisis and all this, for some reason, they're kind of naturally gravitating towards, oh, maybe I should grow my own vegetables and all this type of stuff. I mean, you know, from a from a completely rational or economic standpoint, you know, why? I mean, tomatoes, I don't know about there, but you know, for most places, tomatoes and all these things are still very cheap. But people have this idea that's like, well, yeah, but I want to be, you know, I want to get away from this complex technological system. Right. Even though even today you can get, you know, these vegetables that are very cheap things. So it's kind of a just a natural process that they're thinking of. And so I think it's kind of interesting that people are thinking, and I think that people are naturally going into a more decentralized and kind of self-sustainable, you know, ideal.
The average people generally start talking about this stuff whenever the systems fail.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You know, so like no one was expecting this COVID stuff to pop up the way it did, and it was kind of a surprise and we weren't ready for it. So a lot of the systems weren't structured in such a way so as to handle it. And it was a shock. And I mean, we have people committing suicide over it and everything. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the sort of condition that leads people to say, okay, well, maybe I can't trust the safety net that is in place for me. Maybe I can't trust the state to take care of me. What are my other options?
Yeah.
So if the state gets its act together and does a better job of, you know, not falling apart when stuff like this happens, then I don't think people do want to be bothered with taking care of themselves if there's a suitable nanny willing to do it for them.
Right. And I mean, what really does what does it mean for the governments to, you know, deal with this situation correctly? You know, all these people, you know, this is the big thing in the election in the United States, and with, you know, they're also, you know, criticizing AMLO. Oh, he didn't handle the situation correctly, or what is that supposed to mean? What is it? You should have shut down the entire nation. I mean, well, that's what they're alluding to, right?
This is a failure of both candidates, really, to frame the question in a way that suits them. Neither really took a position as to what quantify or how to quantify success, like how to define success. If either of them even tried to do that, then they would have a shot. But as it is now, they're letting everyone else define it for them, and they're just kind of blowing around in the wind like, I don't know.
Yes. No, absolutely. And you know, if I was watching the, you know, the second and the last debates, and that's the thing, is that the way that the questions are framed, you know, because of the propaganda, if you know anything about propaganda and all this, the way that these questions and these topics are framed, you're stuck, right? So, you know, we know that hundreds of thousands of people have died because of COVID and, you know, because you didn't react quick enough. What's your answer? You know, mm-hmm. it's hard to reframe that question. Oh, and then the next question. Well, you know, we know that we have this horrible systemic racism in the United States, and what are you going to do to deal with that we all know exists, or, you know. Mm-hmm. We know that there was all these horrible wildfires because of climate change and capitalism run amok. What are you going to do to deal with that? You know, these are all questions that are like, you know.
And this is all this is all beginner level stuff.
Yeah.
Like, even if you just read Machiavelli, you know, and maybe some Sun Tzu or something, like, this shouldn't be a problem for these guys. It's really weird that they don't know how to do these basic framing techniques. Like, step one is you never take the middle ground. You know, you pick an extreme and you lean into it, even if it's dead wrong, because people will at least respect your strength for it, and they'll look to you as a leader rather than what these guys are doing, which is nothing. You know, they're just looking impotent and confused and stupid and reckless.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Right.
I don't think we have any viable options on the ticket this time.
Well, no, in the United States, I mean, the only thing that – I mean, I'm not voting. I just – you know. But, you know, I was thinking if I was in the United States, I might vote for Trump just, you know, on the single – well, there's several things that he's better on, and right. I think the Democrats deserve to lose because they fucking suck. But on the issue of the lockdowns alone – and, you know, Biden says, you know, he'd listen to everything that Fauci says and probably do a nationwide mask mandate and all this type of stuff. So I would probably be like a one issue voter and just vote against that, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you got the taxes and other things, but that alone, just on like shutting down the whole economy, I just find to be so insufferable and horrible. That I would just have to vote against that no matter what.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's so weird too, because I have yet to talk to anyone who says that they actually like either of the candidates as people.
Right.
Like, normally that's what we're told.
Yeah, I'd like to have a beer with this guy.
Supposed to do. Exactly, right. Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do, right? As a good candidate. Neither of these guys are pulling that off. They're repulsive. Both sides admit to just picking their team. You know, it's a team sport. So they want their guy to win because it's their team, and they can't stand the thought of the other team winning.
Yeah.
So.
Well, another reason I would like Trump to win is because politics is going to be boring if he's not there. He's just right. Entertaining. He's funny. You know, that's been. I mean, what are the media gonna? What are they gonna cover now? If he's not there, I don't know what they're gonna cover. I don't know what, you know, because if it's just
they've shown us lately that they'll just cover whatever the hell they want to cover.
Yeah, but it's gonna be so stupid and boring. You know, it's gonna be like, I don't know. It's you know, at least the Trump adds some entertainment to the clown show, and I'm really gonna miss that. Seriously.
Oh, he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think the media can have him disappear. So,
nah. I mean, the Democrats could win if they get themselves a proper candidate and they get their shit together.
Yeah,
but they haven't done that yet. So,
right,
they're not going to get it for nothing, you know.
Right. Yeah, I agree, but I guess we'll see in a week. But anyways, all right, man. Well, did you want to plug anything or let us know where people can follow you or something like that?
Yeah. Hey, if you're afraid of World War III or an alien invasion or asteroids or some crazy shit and you want to survive all that, we're going to be down here in Chile, way down in the south, in the jungle, next to the ocean, in this wicked spot. It's really nice. It's quiet when it's not getting robbed. Yeah, there's that. FortGalt.com. You can't really come visit yet because the country's locked down. So yeah. I don't know what to tell you. I guess just wait until things normalize again, assuming that's going to happen. I sure hope it does soon. Like, we're all kind of hoping that when the martial law thing wraps up at the end of the year, that things will normalize. Because, I mean, tourism is a kind of a big deal down here. Most of the cities are fairly tourist-oriented, and so not having that really kills them.
Can you escape? So can you get out of there?
Well, my passport was stolen during that raid.
Oh, shit.
So I've been in the process of getting that replaced. But as soon as it is replaced, I could bug out if I had to. Yeah.
Come hang out in Mexico, man. You're welcome over here.
Oh, I'll get there eventually for sure. My girlfriend's from California, so yeah. We have to go hang out there for a bit too. And yeah, definitely.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, don't think that the answers to your problems are down here. Just think of this as a good retreat to fall back on should you want sort of a plan B.
Okay. All right. Great, Gabriel. I know it's getting late there. Thanks for taking the time. I think this is a very interesting podcast. Hope people enjoy it. And I'll talk to you soon. We'll be in touch and we'll be keeping up with what you're doing.
Right on. Take care.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the Borderless Podcast. Traveling, investing, and living beyond borders.